Welcome to this chapter on governance. Now, this is a very important chapter, as you all are aware, that the crux of every implementation execution is how that particular project is governed. In fact, governance is a large, I would say, broad area, and you must have heard of terms in terms of governance, overall in terms of administration, how the governance is happening. Even in regular, I would say, schooling, I would say that's another good example. How the overall governance is taking place. What you are basically doing under governance is you are keeping the baseline in view, you are looking at what the plan is, and you are governing that the execution implementation is happening as per that plan. You are also supporting the project or implementation with, I would say, various help support from bodies where there are dependencies, and how the progress can be, I would say, monitored and measured. So let's have a quick look on this chapter. So under this chapter, we will cover basically a brief on governance. I will run through a very small governance structure as well. We will touch upon metrics. That's important stuff, and also on SLAs. If you remember, we touched upon SLAs under the contracting chapter. So we'll cover a different view here on SLAs, and then we'll look at performance measurement, how the entire measurement can or takes place, right? So beginning with measuring performance and governance. So what are we implying here? So the crux, if you see, as is mentioned, is measure it to manage it, right? So, or in other words, if you can't measure it, you won't be able to manage it, right? So to manage a situation, especially large scale, I would say, rollouts or projects, it is important to measure it, right? And which is where governance and control becomes very important. You have a baseline set or setting of the right expectations with the entire group of stakeholders. You will come across issues, how those need to be managed, how the communication is going or taking place in the entire, I would say, structure. And then for measurement, you can also use available tools, tools like performance scorecard, right? So what is this measurement against? So this measurement primarily will be against parameters or objectives which are key to the deliverables. So what are some of these? So you have service levels, right? What level of service is expected, desired? What is the value out of it? What is the quality, right? Another important aspect in terms of standard of quality. And then you have customer satisfaction as another one. So the entire monitoring or performance tracking is against preset levels. And if you followed the earlier chapters, you will see that we are advocating time and again in terms of having or bringing clarity to what is the desired state, right? If you have that clarity, you can document it in under the contract, which makes the vendor liable to I would say comply to those levels. If these are loosely handled, then there is a gray area which can lead to, I would say, non-harmonious situations in the engagement, right? So let us look at a governance model. So this is just a model for reference. As I keep on mentioning, use it, use the model as a input template or reference to apply it to the situation on ground, right? So this model considers that an execution or a implementation or a transition needs to happen globally, right? You have customer orgs which have offices across the globe, right? They are transitioning a process which impacts their various other offices across the globe, right? So what this structure has done is, you will see that basically the triangle is a deliberate input here. You will see that there are four bodies with one body nearing the apex, right? So which is the prime body for the particular, I would say, engagement? So if we go from top to bottom or bottom to top, either case, you will see that, let's take a top to bottom view, you will see that at the apex you have the program steering committee, right? And we'll touch upon these one by one. That has a layer, a level below it is the program committee. Then you have one for technical areas, and the other one is regional, right? Now your governance can be run even in a simple two-layer approach, in terms of having just a project running committee and a steering committee. It can follow a three or four layer depending on what the deliverables are. So let's touch upon each of these in brief. So we are talking of the steering committee, right? So if you saw, this is at the apex of the model, right? The steering committee, as I mentioned, it's the apex body, and it will have the management representatives that are designated for this program, right? Now these stakeholders will be the ones who were involved in the you can say strategizing or decision making, right? That's because they will have a background, right? If it's a large scale, it makes sense in having some key people who are involved in the I would say assessment or decision making. And these will not be the only group there, and there will be some diverse members present from different functions of the business, right? So let us assume this is outsourcing linked to IT, right? The steering committee should, despite of this being an IT I would say transition, have senior representatives, if it's a larger setup, from the various functions like production, finance, you may have marketing, right? So the heads need to be there to have a view on what is happening here. Activities may not be directly linked to them, but there may be certain areas which can be touch point to their function. For example, if you look at finance, right, the progress here will give them an indication that yes, a certain payout is on the cards, right? An issue here, or I would say non-compliance by the service provider, gives an indication that we may have to hold the payments, right? So this is a key committee which has core members from the various business functions, right? And it is proposed to have a monthly meeting with the committee, and it is basically the program or project team which will present to this committee the status. They will put forward decisions required or matters where they are stuck and they need guidance, right? These I would say aspects are critical, because what happens is the program or project I would say working group, they are not in a position to decide on behalf of the entire organization, right? So if there is a decision to say roll out something, let us take the example of upgradation of the end user laptops which we discussed. Now if the program and project team, they have a plan available in terms of how this will be happen, this will be done, say for 1,000 users, they would for sure be at a, I would say, a level where they would want to have a go ahead to do this globally, right? There are multiple touch points in terms of doing global rollouts. There are time zone issues, there are different stakeholders, there are different languages in different countries, right? And each of the you will see that each of the setup in an in a nation, it gets governed typically more of the by the local jurisdiction, right? So people may be apprehensive of certain stuff, they may not agree. So decisions like these, right, should be put forward to the committee, a go ahead taken, and then moved forward, right? Let us look at a simple merger or acquisition case, right? For example, there's an A organization which has outsourced its operations, IT operations, to a service provider, right? And that A organization now has acquired a smaller group. Let us assume it is there in the United States, right? Now, the group which has been acquired, they will have a different setup compared to this A organization, right? They may have different applications in use, different ways of working. There won't be standardization. Now, if this service provider has to manage or handle the outsourcing or provide support to that particular group, first and foremost, a transition needs to be taken place between both the orgs, right? So that the service provider is made aware or gets to know what the current situation or status is of how that group is running, right? The service provider will then point out gaps. He may come forward with his requirements for resources or his queries or issues that he has. For example, say your organization is using Outlook for email. The group acquired is using Lotus Notes for email. So you have two different systems now for the same email, right? So what kind of harmonization needs to be done, right? These are points which will come out, and it is the overall steering group which will decide on further course of action. These decisions are critical for this committee. They may look at harmonizing it in terms of let us harmonize Outlook, or they may say let us continue with both for a certain duration. It also has aspects of cost, right? You have licenses to be procured, or you may have procured and those licenses will go away. So there are multiple touch points. But decisions like these is what this committee can help give guidance upon and move forward. So what topics are covered by the committee? They will look at the project progress, how the financials are working, what kind of SLAs have been agreed, what are the improvements happening, right, and whether we are on schedule. So the presentation made to the steering committee will need to indicate how that particular, let us say, transition project is doing in terms of cost, in terms of schedule, right, in terms of resources. So the committee needs to have a clear view on that project with respect to the deliverables, right? So this is how I would say the steering committee will support the model. Let us look at the program committee, which is primarily the operational body. Now, typically this program will include, it will be like program/project committee. But the reason it's called a program is so that you can cover multiple projects if they are part of the same program, right? It can happen that the transition is a larger program, and then it has some sub projects because of different technologies or different requirements. So the program can include or cover all those projects. Now, this is the operational body, right? And here, the lead is the program sponsor, a program sponsor from the customer end, right? So, customer org will designate a program sponsor who can take decisions on the operational front, right? And who will guide the team work with the project team to ensure that things are happening on ground. Now, this is a more closely knit, team engagement, where the proposed meeting frequency is at least weekly, so that the weekly progress is discussed here. While you are discussing, say, a monthly progress in the steering committee, this meeting, this body here should have a overview on the weekly status. You generally typically known as WSRs, weekly status reviews. These are carried out in the program, I would say at the program level. And what kind of topics will be covered here? Here it will be core to the project management. And when you say project management, it will be like tracking of the project plan in MPP or Excel, seeing the details in terms of where the dependencies are, what is getting stuck up, how can that be resolved, what is the resourcing situation, is the quality up to the mark, are we on schedule, what are the program risks, right? This is another important area discussed here, whether we are within the budget or things are going bad. And just as I mentioned here, I have included OCM. Now, OCM is Organizational Change Management. This is generally a part of a structure where you have a larger change in the organization. This is critical, I would say, for transitions because you have induction of a new service provider at a large scale. It is critical for changes like the projects we discuss in terms of end user laptop upgradations from Windows 7 to Windows 10, because that's a big change, right? There's a change in ways of working, right? You don't have one drive in Win 7, you have one drive in Win 10, right? You have multi-factor authentication in Windows 10, you don't have it on Windows 7. So there's a change in the ways of working, and typically people who are not well-versed with IT, the production guys or the shop floor workers, what happens is they go by the basic teachings with them. And for them, it's like a big change if you have to follow a certain procedure which is not part of your current procedure. So OCM gets included here, and this particular aspect ensures there is they work in a structured manner as well, note that. So they will start with sessions, info sessions. They will inform, they will have town hall meetings where they will intimate the larger audience in terms of how or what is being planned. After those info sessions, these guys will conduct workshop with smaller teams, right, to ensure that the understanding is going to the next level. So this team takes care of covering the change in the organization. So that's where the program body, I would say, works. Going forward, this is the third body which we indicated, and it is the technical committee. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this may not be required in the governance structure. It is not mandatory to have this. But if you are carrying out transitions or projects which are highly technical in nature or have large technical activities in the project, then it becomes important to have such a committee of experts on the technical front. Why it is important is because what will happen is if you are stuck at technical issues or a technical guidance is required, the program committee or steering committee is not a core technical committee who are on top of the technology, right? They can give an indication or guidance to reach out to a particular expert. But this committee can help solving those technical issues, giving those guidance in a faster manner. And again, this is expected to again be weekly, on a weekly basis. Plus, it can be weekly plus ad hoc, right? If there is an issue which is impacting the larger, I would say, rollout or organization phase. So this particular team committee can help. So, and this will be a smaller team, but it will have experts of your domain. For example, if you are doing that Windows upgrade, you will have an end user care technical expert who has worked or experience in the end user care side. If it is largely network driven project or rollout, you will have guys who are network experts, right? CCNA, CCN certified. So these guys can help respond to technical issues as well as give guidance where there is a query or where the team is stuck up on ground in terms of having multiple options to do a particular work. So what kind of topics will be covered here? Again, as we mentioned, primarily it will be technical issues, technical updates, and as I mentioned, some decisions required if they are for the committee. So that's how the technical committee supports the structure. And the last body here mentioned is, it is the regional committee, right? So again, not at all a mandatory block, it is purely optional. But the reason for including is, if you have global rollouts, right, it is important to have a sync up with the various regions. That sync up may be a little difficult in terms of setting it at a particular time zone, but this is very critical and important. As I mentioned, different nations have different styles of working. They have different laws as well applying to them. For example, let me give you an example on data retention part. So US has a different, I would say, law on that. Europe different, Asia different. So the data retention part will vary based on the regional aspect. But within Europe, you will see that there is a different, I would say, following by Germany. So while say Finland is also in Europe, a part of Europe, and Germany as well, Germany enforces strong or larger periods of data retention. They had, I'm not sure of the current one, but they had periods of minimum 7 years for which this data should be made available, compared to say Finland, where they would say 3 years is sufficient, right? Germany will say the data should not, if it is for the if it is data which is of the local jurisdiction, right? For example, I have data which is of a plant in Germany. That data cannot reside say at a data center in Helsinki, Finland, right? So there are variations, and then each of these team representatives, they bring this up, and then it is where your a base level is reached based on the various discussions. You have exceptions for such countries, right? But this discussion or catch up with the regional guys helps in also giving them a view of how things are progressing in the other regions compared to their regions, which is also important for a rollout. For example, again, this sometimes helps in covering technical issues. You have a pilot done, things are working good, and you roll out, and you see that the rollout in a particular country, like say China or probably Korea, it's running at good speed, and it is largely stuck up in places say like United States. So you then have a view in terms of what non rollout challenges or technical challenges are coming into play, right? While you have done a pilot, things are working fine, it is progressing, so you know that there is no issue in the concept or the design of the project. But why a particular region is not progressing, there may be issues in terms of the access there, issues in terms of how the local body looks at that rollout, issues in terms of culture as well. So for example, say here, people in Asia, they may be ready to go down to a conference room and get their laptop chain. There, people may be expecting that they are reached out, their calendars are blocked, and then the support guy goes to them. So there are various things which I would say come out of these discussions, and this helps I would say getting a global view of the rollout. As I mentioned, this is not a mandatory block. Governance can happen in minimal blocks as well, but I have covered this just so that you have a idea in terms of what additional block can be included, right? So these are I would say a quick touch upon a small representative governance model. Let us quickly touch upon metrics in outsourcing, right? So metrics are important elements. Metrics are required to measure the results or outputs, right? So what are you doing with metrics? You are basically quantifying, right? Why is a metric important? It helps quantify. It will help you quantify using numbers, right? So you have a situation on ground and you don't know what the status is, right? So using a metric will help quantify what the situation is more accurately, right? And these can cover some key assessment areas. Five of them I mentioned here in terms of quality, quantity, money, time and satisfaction, right? And if, as I mentioned earlier, if you are clear in terms of what metrics you want to measure, these can be included right in your RFP or request for proposal document, and you can define it prior to initiation of the program, right? So that the service provider or the respondent is very clear of what is going to be measured, right? So I have a slide at the very end of this chapter, which I have picked out from a practical, I would say, view, and it will give you a more idea in terms of what this is. But in the meanwhile, these aspect of metrics, like it will help you give visibility, right? It will give you visibility in terms of certain areas. So if you can see, if you have set targets or goals in areas of service level, quality and cost reduction, these reflection of these can be easily brought out using metrics, right? And again, these are not exhaustive areas. You can add multiple areas to them, more areas to them, based on what the engagement requires, right? Even vendor management can be a key aspect that can be included, right? So what is the consideration for selection of a metric, right? Let us very briefly touch upon this. What is the consideration for selection of a metric? So the first one is, you should choose a measurement that motivate the right behavior, right? Why this is being brought up here in terms of a behavior view, right? Why are we saying that the measurements should be chosen that motivate the right behavior? See, basically, end of the day, you will see that it's more of a mutual engagement between the client and the service provider, right? And it is not just the contract that will help define the services, or I would say glorify the services. There has to be enough motivation of fairness for the service provider, right? And which is why this point is brought up in terms of citing or wanting to motivate the appropriate behavior from both the parties. This is not one-sided, right? It is both, because it's like a give and take, I would say, engagement. It can't be one-sided. Just because I am the customer and I have the contract, demand won't help me get a motivated behavior. Why? It may get me a compliance behavior, right? So the customer also, the client's folk needs to put himself in the service provider's shoe and have a view of how the deliverables look from the other end. The service provider should also appreciate why there's a particular demand or requirement from the customer. What is the view that he is getting and where is he missing, right? So getting an insight on the optimization of performance is important, right? And both the, I would say, parties involved here need to extend that fair and trust, openness in behavior and approach, which will give confidence to both to openly discuss and bring out, I would say, better the engagement. So this is the first consideration that you should have. You should have, you should choose measurements that motivate the right behavior. The second one, again, this says that the metrics should reflect factors which are within the service provider's control, right? One cannot have, you should not demand for metrics which are out of the service provider's control. Then it's unfair, right? To be very fair to the engagement, the service provider should be equipped from the customer end in terms of whatever inputs required, whatever support is required. And the demand should be such that the service provider is able to meet that, right? And we are also talking here of penalization, right? So there will be in the process a block or area where the customer's consent or input or probably processing is required. The process can have blocks which are touch points to the customer, right? And it is quite possible that there may be a delay on those blocks in terms of approvals. Say the service provider has built up the solution for rollout and he has presented to the customer for approval. If I as a customer delay that while the plan has factored say only 2 weeks and I take 6 weeks, so I am causing basically a 4 week delay. Because of no formal approval, the execution can't go ahead, right? And I cannot be penalizing the service provider for the delay in the project then, right? That's unfair. So one should not penalize service provider for delays caused by the client's lack of performance, right? The other point is, we're talking of making this two-sided, make the SLAs two-sided. By measuring the client's performance on mutually dependent actions. So as I mentioned, it is quite possible that an equal amount of input or contribution would be required from the customer end. So which is where contribution from both the parties becomes important, right? Let us move to the next consideration. Here this says choose metrics that are easily collected, right? So this aspect talks of gathering or collection of data, right? You need to ensure that the metric that is defined, it is defined in a manner that there is a practical feasibility and ease of collection of that data. For projecting that metric, the service provider should be in a position where he can easily collect that data, right? Ideal scenario, this should be automatically available in background, and this is possible, I would say, right out of experience. You have, as I mentioned earlier, the example of ServiceNow, right? So that's a very, I would say, huge and big product, which if utilized in the entire environment can help support getting data for the metric measurement, and it is by virtue of whatever is logged into that tool, right? One should favor ease of collection, right? For example, any service request, right? If it is done through a system or a ticket is raised where you have a reference, so then you have a base data available for that. That's a very good example to understand. If all the requests are having ticket numbers or they are logged, then a report can be extracted. So getting that data is easy, right? And if a service provider has to put in manual effort, then that is not desired, right? In today's time, it is desired that the data, at least data collection, is automatic. So that's the point on choosing metrics that are easily collected. Let us look at the next consideration, which says less is more, right? Now, one should not be too, I would say, over enthusiastic in just defining hundreds of metrics, right? If you have a larger number of metrics, it doesn't mean the program is good or the project is good, or you will get good visibility, right? The issue is the data will be so huge, and then you will find it difficult to correlate, right? And if the data if you are unable to analyze it and make sense out of it, it would not be fruitful or useful, right? So too few metrics is also not advised. Too large a number is also not advised. You should have an average set of metrics, and those should be clearly thought of and designed in a manner that they give reflection on the right aspect of the deliverable. So this is less is more is the consideration. Moving ahead to the next one is set a proper baseline, right? So what we are saying here is you should have a proper reasonable or attainable performance level set for the metrics, right? One is you are setting them not in huge numbers, adequate numbers. You then are trying to have a proper baseline to this performance level, right? So as I mentioned earlier, collation of data is a challenge if it's too much, too huge, right? So automation helps, right? You may have historical data as well available, right? So when you are finally getting a view on these metrics and how the SLA is formed up, you should be in a position to have a view of what the baseline was. It cannot be like just a churn out of what data has been available and you put in plugged in data which was legacy as well. That's incorrect. For example, if the customer is already using tools like ServiceNow, and beyond a point a transition happened for a process to the service provider, the service provider comes in. Now the tool has been in use prior to the service provider entry, you have data which is available prior to the engagement, data related to the same process. It would be unfair to use that data as well in terms of what the service provider has done and get a holistic view, because that would be unfair to the service provider, right? It will set a bias, right? So the baselining has to be correct in terms of let us measure this post X date of agreement, right? So that gives a fair idea. So it is important to set a proper baseline. The last one on consideration is defined with care, right? So the service provider will also be enthusiastic to meet the SLA, right? And since they are aware that there is contractual compliance and it can also be linked to the commercials, they will want to tweak the SLA definitions to ensure that they are met, right? It is like giving an understanding from their end what they meant about it and how they are feeling it is compliant, right? So it is important for the customer to define the SLA clearly, right? It is important to clarify what is the reason of defining that particular SLA, what is the intent of that service level, and why it is required. And it should be made very clear to the service provider that this requirement is not a compliance requirement. It is a requirement to understand, get a view of the on-ground situation and how things are, right? As I mentioned, metrics will help quantify the situation, right? And as I mentioned earlier, the contract should also document and it helps in keeping that clarity right at the contractual level, how the service will be monitored, reported, and reviewed. Thank you.